who were investigating foreclosure fraud, the use of mass documents, fake documents in foreclosure cases that take people out of their homes, were working at the Florida Attorney General's office. And they were investigating someone who was Lender Processing Services, a key donor to Bondi. And so when she got into office, she fired those two high-level prosecutors. So she has no problem doing something like that. And when she says we're going to investigate the investigators and prosecute the prosecutors, you know, this is the extension of the Trump intimidation and bullying scheme into the Justice Department. And it's the very weaponization that he decried, and her as well. So, yeah, I think it's a difficult thing.
And they kept bringing up Kash Patel, Trump's nominee for FBI, though he's supposedly independent, not clear whether any of these people will be independent from President Trump. We have 15 seconds.
Yeah, 100%. The lack of independence is what Democrats focused on in that hearing. She kind of deflected, did not give major answers on that. And so that uncertainty continues.
David Day, an executive editor of the American Prospect, will link to your article, Pam Bondi and the pay-to-play justice system, and also your writing on the L.A. fires. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh for another edition of Democracy Now!
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, healthcare workers say they're standing firm and they want better, safer conditions as they strike against Providence. An update on efforts to help the houseless in Multnomah County. And what Portland police and the city's mayor are doing to get ready for Presidential Inauguration Day. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, January 16, 2025. I'm Minette Newell. Thanks so much for listening tonight. As Oregon's largest ever healthcare workers strike continues, Providence says it's ready to restart negotiations with all 11 striking units. So their bargaining team submitted proposals through federal mediators. The union says the proposals address issues at hospitals and clinics across the state, like chronic understaffing and competitive pay packages to recruit and retain more staff. As KBOO's Dave Johnson reports, bargaining teams say they're waiting for a response from Providence.
After 5 days of Oregon's largest healthcare strike, including the state's first doctor's strike, Providence Health announced it's ready to return to the bargaining table. The Oregon Nurses Association is calling for competitive wages and resolution of what it calls systemic, unsafe staffing issues. Kathy Keene is a nurse at Providence St. Vincent Medical Center who's been on the picket line. She says Providence needs to focus on recruiting and retaining skilled staff.
I want to work with the best of the best, and when we are the lowest paid caregivers in the Portland metro area, it's hard to argue why people should come here and stay here long term.
Providence says it's ready to return to the bargaining table, thanks in part to what it calls an unprecedented number of union nurses who have chosen not to strike. Earlier this week, Providence filed an unfair labor practice complaint. They say the Nurses Association unlawfully delayed bargaining by refusing to meet and not responding to proposals in a timely manner. A recent poll conducted by the Nurses Association found that more than 90% of patients report a negative experience with Providence and support the strike. Laura Wadlin has been a Providence patient since she was a kid and says she's had many discouraging experiences with rushed providers.
Every time I go back, my fears are only confirmed. So that really reinforces the inclination not to even try.
Keen says other union members are also concerned about acuity or the level of care that a patient needs based on how sick they are. She wants nursing assignments tailored more towards patient need rather than focusing on a staff-to-patient ratio. She adds this issue is not unique to St. Vincent.
This is something that system-wide we've seen issues with, so we know that systemic issues need systemic change, and that's really what we're working towards.
Providence says it's committed to following Oregon's staffing law and is taking acuity into account. The Nurses Association says 305 unsafe staffing complaints were filed against Providence in 2024. For KBOO News and Oregon News Service, I'm Dave Johnson.
Striking healthcare workers say even though they're off the job, they're not off duty. Wednesday, nurses and hospitalists at Providence St. Vincent took part in a blood drive across from the hospital. Another blood donation event will take place on Monday, January 20th, that's described as an opportunity to honor the life of Martin Luther King Jr. Multnomah County Commissioners got an update today about efforts throughout the community to fight houselessness.
Within Multnomah County, we've made tremendous strides over the last few years about engaging other departments. We're now funding 10 other departments and allowing them to serve people that they're closest to. It's really all of Multnomah County and much of the City of Portland, City of Gresham that are doing this work. The larger homeless response system, which is not owned by one department within the county, but is owned by all of us collectively, and that's consistent with our vision of showing up as one county to tackle some of these challenges. 2024 was a really strong year. We've talked about the number of people that we've connected to services that we've put into housing. We finished 2024 on a very strong note. So going into 2025, I'm really pleased to tell you that the momentum that we were building, not just around spending, but also making sure that we were spending in the right priorities and getting the outcomes that we wanted. All of those are above 25%, particularly in rapid rehousing. We're showing some really great results that exceed the work plan and the commitments we've made to the community. That's 421 people into housing. That's a 166% increase over last year. Another critical measure is shelter. Old myths die hard. So I want to take this opportunity with the new commission and a new city council in particular to put a final stake in the idea that our department or Multnomah County is not building shelters. We will continue to prioritize permanent housing, but we also recognize that unsheltered homelessness is a public health crisis that demands an urgent and immediate response. You see here, Multnomah County has opened 17 new shelters, all with services of some sort or another connected to them since 2020. That includes motel, village, behavioral health, and congregate shelters.
Portland police say they will increase patrols ahead of Presidential Inauguration Day, January 20th. They're getting ready for potential unrest, but unlike 4 years ago, they're not doing it alone. They say they now have a comprehensive plan, and Mayor Keith Wilson says he supports it.
I'm grateful to be standing with City Administrator Michael Jordan, Deputy Director of the Portland Bureau of Emergency Management, Jordan Wiley, Portland Police Chief Bob Day, and DA Nathan Vasquez. We're here to reaffirm the essential right to peaceful protest, a fundamental pillar of our democracy. Our leadership across the city, county, state, and federal levels share a strong alignment in goals and expectations for any public demonstrations. We will not condone violence or unlawful destruction of our city. Imagine what Portland can do united. We can unite around free speech, freedom, acceptance, and protecting our vulnerable. Passion does not overrule our responsibility to our neighbors. If we see actions intended to hurt people or harm our community, our law enforcement partners will be forced to intervene. We want to lead by example.
Portland Police Chief Bob Day added in.
I want to thank City Council as well, the Governor, the Oregon State Police. You know, we stand before you again, united in our effort to preserve everyone's First Amendment right to peacefully express their views as well as maintaining public order. Our unified command includes the Fire Bureau, the Police Bureau, and the Bureau of Emergency Management. Thanks to the direction of our city administrator, Michael Jordan, his leadership, and the Public Safety Service Area coming together, as well as our regional partners and our federal partners, constantly in communication, the relationships we built over the last year that we saw come to fruition and allow for a very safe and effective election week, I am confident is going to materialize over the course of the next few days, and encouraged on where we're going. And I base that not only upon current intel and current information, but the responsiveness of the men and women of the Portland Police Bureau, their professionalism and their dedication to excellence, our goals of transforming the dynamic between the police and the people we serve, reducing crime and the fear of crime, and I'm grateful for that. We are monitoring several different aspects of the intelligence community, working with our federal and local partners. There are a handful of events that have been identified over the course of the weekend and into the first of the week. So we will be out doing our outreach. We've been meeting with groups that are posting online their intent to protest or demonstrate. Our dialogue officers have received extensive training, and that program is up and running as we're doing a lot of outreach, making ourselves available to help facilitate an event that maybe they want to share some information with us that we can amplify their message, create space for their message, as well as providing that safety and security for the rest of the city. We have made huge strides as a community in the last 16 months in the area of public safety. Crime is trending down in many major categories, including vandalism. It is my expectation that that will continue through this weekend and into 2025 as we continue our crime reduction efforts and really creating a place that everybody wants to live, play, work, and thrive in. The inauguration this weekend is held over the celebration of a great civil rights leader, Martin Luther King. And I recently finished one of his books called Why We Can't Wait, heard in 1963. We have really no better example in our nation's history of a man who understood the power of nonviolence and the power to bring about change. And when he went to Birmingham in 1963, probably the most segregated community in our country at the time, led by, of course, Sheriff Bull Connor, the notorious racist sheriff, King required anybody who participated in the movement to sign a pledge. And that pledge had 10 points to it. One of them is, remember always that the nonviolent seeks justice and reconciliation, not victory. Seeks justice and reconciliation, not victory. For the organization, for the police bureau, for the city, for our community, this is not about winning. This is not about coming out on top. This is about us as a community continuing to express our points of view in managing the public space. Another one that I appreciated, he says, observe with both friend and foe the ordinary rules of courtesy. Think of where we could be if even in some of our greatest times of crisis, we could just observe with both friend and foe the ordinary rules of courtesy. He says, refrain from the violence of fist, tongue, or heart. So here was King entering far more volatile situations than we will be facing over the course of the weekend. But I just think it's prudent to recognize his legacy, his teachings, and see the application of those principles as much today as they were almost 60 years ago now. I'm confident as we enter into the weekend that we have a good plan in place and look forward to seeing Portlanders show up in a way that demonstrates our values, our character, our strength, and really demonstrate to the United States as a whole that Portland is a city where all are welcome and all are allowed to express their thoughts on that.
And a warning from Multnomah County District Attorney Nathan Vasquez.
The right to protest does not include the right to vandalize buildings, break windows, or hurt people. If you break the law during these events, you will be prosecuted, period. I want to thank the hardworking officers and deputies and employees of the city of Portland and the sheriff's office and everyone else that's been working so hard to keep our city safe and our county safe. I'm pleased that after our presidential election, we saw an immense amount of collaboration, and what we saw was a very peaceful election time here in our county. I believe that happened in large part because of the collaboration among the various agencies, departments, and this community. So we can certainly support free speech, and we want to see peaceful protests, but we will not tolerate in any respect destruction of property or hurting people or interfering with other people's right to peacefully assemble and protest. The people in this county have a right to express their thoughts and their feelings when they want and where they want, but that does not include creating fear for others, demonstrations that are violent and destroy property. If that occurs, those individuals will be prosecuted.
That was Multnomah County DA Nathan Vasquez. As threats of deporting illegal immigrants increase with the incoming Trump administration, Eric Tegedoff reports that groups in Washington state say immigrants are vital to their local economy.
Research from the Washington State Budget and Policy Center and Economic Policy Institute finds nearly a fifth of workers in the state are immigrants, and they generate $145 billion in economic output. Senior policy analyst with the Washington State Budget and Policy Center, Katie Dong, says incoming President Donald Trump's plans for mass deportations are a threat to the state.
That is just inhumane and horrendous. We don't stand by that at all. Secondly, it's bad for our state economy.
Dong's research also found 29% of Main Street businesses are owned by immigrants. A coalition of groups and lawmakers in the state, including Working Washington, Washington Immigrant and Solidarity Network, and State Senator Rebecca Saldana, is urging Governor Bob Ferguson to protect immigrants. The group says his office should direct the Department of Corrections to stop cooperating with U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Dong says lawmakers in Olympia have a chance to protect undocumented immigrants and adds the state can continue to fund health care for these folks. Lawmakers are moving ahead with a bill to provide unemployment insurance for people who are undocumented.
Passing this legislation would be incredibly important in ensuring that our undocumented workers do have access to a wage replacement when they lose their jobs due to no fault of their own.
Dong says state lawmakers have an important role to play in this session as Trump comes back into power.
Washington, and especially our Washington legislators, have an opportunity to protect immigrants, resource immigrants who are such an important part of our community as well as our workforce and economy.
I'm Eric Tegedoff.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for KBOO News in depth. At 6, it's Rose City Native Radio. Then at 7, American Indian Airwaves. Tonight's weather, partly to mostly cloudy, down to 33. Tomorrow's weather, clouds continue. Partial sunshine coming in later, a high of 41. Today in history, on this date in 1919, prohibition was ratified by the states. The quote of the day is from Mark Twain. Prohibition only drives drunkenness behind doors and into dark places and does not cure it or even diminish it. Washington Democratic Governor Bob Ferguson was sworn in Wednesday, taking over for Democrat Jay Inslee, who held the role for 12 years. Ferguson was previously Attorney General in Washington, and in his inaugural address, he took a bipartisan tone, making appeals to the Republican minority in the legislature. The state faces a tough budget cycle with $2 to $4 billion in cuts proposed.
Let us have a bias toward action. Let us listen to one another without consideration for party so that the strongest argument prevails. That is how we do our best work. And let me be specific with examples of how we can work in a bipartisan way. Representative Connors, I'm excited to work with you to get your Homes for Heroes legislation to my desk. Let's recognize the contributions of police officers, firefighters, behavioral health professionals, and other critical public servants and ensure they can access low-interest loans to purchase their first homes. Representative Davis, you've developed a robust and balanced package to improve public safety. I look forward to assisting you in this important work. Representative Dent, I share your commitment to supporting Washington farmers. By the way, that includes ensuring they receive the rebates they were promised under the Climate Commitment Act. Thank you. Representative Santos and Callan, thank you for stepping up to work on addressing the youth mental health crisis. There is no more important we face right now than that work. Senator Braun, I hope to work with you to adopt reasonable limits on the governor's emergency powers. We can do that together. Representative Reed, your proposal to ensure that every Washingtonian with a 3.0 GPA receives automatic acceptance into many of our exceptional state institutions of higher education should be adopted by this legislature, and I look forward to signing it. Senator Holey, thank you for your legislation proposing a $100 million grant program to help local law enforcement agencies hire more well-trained officers to improve public safety. That idea was a cornerstone of my campaign for governor. Any budget I sign must include this funding. My administration will work with President Trump where we can. We will stand up to him when we must. And that most certainly includes protecting Washingtonians' reproductive freedom. That's why I'm taking action to protect those freedoms. The times call for action. I will sign an executive order directing the Department of Health to convene a roundtable of medical providers, reproductive health experts, and policymakers to recommend strategies for protecting reproductive freedom. I'm proud of the robust legal protections we have here in Washington State, including, thanks to you, the nation's strongest health data privacy law. But I'm confident there is even more that we can do. During my campaign for governor, I had the honor of meeting Washingtonians in all 39 counties from all walks of life. And the single biggest concern I heard was affordability. Washingtonians need more housing, lots more housing. We must make it easier, faster, and less expensive to build housing of all kinds. The times call for action, and that is why I'm signing an executive order directing state agencies to review all regulations that impact housing, permitting, and construction, and identify any provision that can be streamlined, deferred, or eliminated. This issue is critical, and that's precisely why I turn to one of our state's most trusted leaders to lead the housing task force of my transition team, Lieutenant Governor Denny Heck. Lieutenant Governor Heck presented me with a 42-page report containing 20 recommendations to address this crisis, including many that reflect ongoing legislative efforts to expand transit-oriented development, protect vulnerable renters and small landlords, and give local governments tools and incentives to improve housing supply. Adopting these recommendations is one of my top priorities. We must also make Washington more affordable in other ways. As Attorney General, my team and I stopped an illegal grocery merger that would have increased the price of groceries for families. We also stopped illegal price-fixing schemes that increased the price of chicken, tuna, and household items like computers and televisions. What did I do with the $100 million my incredible team made those corporations pay? I sent those dollars directly to Washington families. Trust me on this. I'm taking that same laser focus on affordability to the governor's office. I'm excited to work with Senator Richelli and Representative Berg on legislation to ensure that every student attending K-12 public schools receives free breakfast and lunch as part of their basic education. Right now, if you're a single parent working 40 hours a week, making $19 an hour, your child does not qualify for free meals. That is unacceptable. This will improve learning for kids and save time and money for working parents. Another challenge we face is the multi-billion dollar budget shortfall. We should have an open and honest dialogue about how we arrived at this shortfall and what lessons we must learn.
And that was Washington's new governor, Bob Ferguson, who is replacing longtime three-term governor Jay Inslee, who decided not to seek another term. Inslee was known for his work on climate and for his jabs at Republicans. During his tenure, Washington adopted some of the strictest COVID requirements in the nation, helping to hold down the death rate. Inslee was also able to build into law a requirement for companies to pay for their air pollution, plus new tax benefits for families. Inslee gave his final State of the State address to cheering lawmakers at the state capitol in Olympia.
Washington State is a light to the world. We are a beacon of progress by so many measures. Because we follow the science, we work together. We refuse to leave our neighbors behind. When the law said the state could put someone to death, we refused to accept an imperfect system. We ended the death penalty. When the U.S. Supreme Court stole the right of choice, we stood up for reproductive health everywhere by welcoming patients and doctors to Washington State. When working families needed relief, we passed the Working Families Tax Credit, energy rebates, a public health option, free transit for everyone 18 and younger. When we saw LGBTQ youth being abused and manipulated by conversion therapy, we banned it. When we saw our state still had racist housing covenants, we struck those down too. And as deaths rose nationwide, we held the firearms industry accountable and passed some of the strongest reforms in the United States of America. This legislature has a lot of hard work ahead. You have the grit and the vision to keep up this pace of progress. I know this about you. It's why I'm grateful to have worked with all of you. I woke up every morning these last 12 years asking how I could help Washingtonians realize their dreams. I was filled with confidence in the genius, the compassion, and the grand ambitions of our great state of Washington.
Confirmation hearings continue for Trump's nominees. Biden says American hostages will be released as part of an Israeli-Hamas ceasefire deal. And North Carolina Republicans try new arguments to overturn a state Supreme Court judge's election. With more on the stories impacting our democracy, here's 2025 Talks.
No one from either side of the aisle should want there to be any issues with election integrity in our country. We should all want our elections to be free and fair, and the rules and the laws to be followed.
Attorney General nominee Pam Bondi says she accepts that Joe Biden is the president, but refuses to say if former President Donald Trump lost in 2020. During her Senate confirmation hearing, Bondi condemned what she called the weaponization of the Justice Department and promised not to politicize it. But Bondi also did not rule out prosecuting Trump critics. The Secretary of State nominee, Florida Senator Marco Rubio, and Trump's pick for budget director, Project 2025 author Russell Vogt, also had hearings. Connecticut Democrat Richard Blumenthal called Vogt's assertion the law giving Congress sole control of federal spending is unconstitutional astonishing.
That someone in this responsible a position would, in effect, say that the president is above the law.
In his farewell address to the nation, Biden warned against a dangerous concentration of extreme wealth and called oligarchy a threat to America. He announced a pending Gaza ceasefire to start Sunday and include the release of American hostages. Zarabillo with the Council on American-Islamic Relations calls it bittersweet and long overdue.
The international community needs to prioritize accountability, upholding human rights, and providing urgently needed relief to the people in Gaza.
The deal would end more than 15 months of fighting, which killed 1,700 Israelis and more than 46,000 Palestinians. Republicans in North Carolina have filed new court arguments for tossing 60,000 ballots in the yet-to-be-certified state Supreme Court race. Three recounts show the Democratic incumbent won by about 700 votes, but the GOP challenger now claims overseas military ballots can't be trusted. Voting rights activist Kate Barr says that's undemocratic.
As soon as we set the precedent that if you don't like the outcome of an election, you take it to court and throw it out until you win, we have left the land of democracy and moved into something much closer to what we left back in the revolution.
I'm Catherine Carley.
A California tribe lands a bid for a hotel and casino. Governor Burgum could be the next interior secretary. And South Dakota tribal leaders call for a reset in relations if Governor Noem is confirmed in Trump's cabinet. With these stories and more, here's Antonia Gonzalez and National Native News.
South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem is likely headed to Washington. Tribal leaders are calling for a reset in state-tribal relations. That came during an annual tribal address at the legislature. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Lee Strubinger has more.
Chairman Garrett Renville of the Sisseton Wahpeton Tribe says the state of South Dakota is in the midst of an historic moment. In addition to changes for Governor Noem, the U.S. Senate is led by a South Dakotan, Republican John Thune. Renville says the state's lone congressman, Dusty Johnson, is working well in a divided U.S. House of Representatives.
South Dakota is now literally at the center of the political universe. We have an opportunity to bring about real change for our people, but we must work together.
Renville says state-tribal relations have hit a series of breakdowns in government-to-government engagement. That came following comments by Governor Noem alleging Mexican drug cartels were operating out of reservations.
Let's reset. Let's rebuild. Let's start to listen and actually hear.
Renville points to areas where the state and tribes have worked together, including on a resolution in 2024 urging Congress to address law enforcement shortages on tribal lands. He's urging the state to pass another resolution, having Congress rescind the Dakota Removal Act. Renville and other tribal leaders met with Governor Noem and Lieutenant Governor Larry Roden this week. Roden is next in line to become governor when Noem resigns her seat. Standing Rock Chairwoman Janet Alkier also attended the meeting. She says they talked with Noem about having a tribal law enforcement training center in the northern part of the country. That training takes place in New Mexico.
As we believe that if we had some place up here up north, rather than sending all our folks down south, I think locally is much better.
Alkier says she's also looking forward to working with Lieutenant Governor Roden, who is a West River rancher, when he becomes governor. I'm Lee Strubinger.
As Senate hearings continue this week for President-elect Donald Trump's cabinet picks, tribal leaders are among those closely watching. Navajo Nation President Boo Nigrin issued a statement expressing his support for former North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum, nominated to lead the Department of the Interior. A California tribe is celebrating after the Biden administration greenlit its petition to put land into trust for a casino north of San Francisco. Jacob Resnick reports.
The Koi Nation of Northern California applauded the U.S. Department of the Interior's decision on Monday to put 68 acres into trust for the Shiloh Resort and Casino in northern Sonoma County. The decision follows a federal judge rebuffing attempts by a neighboring tribe to block the development. Darian Beltran, chair of the Koi Nation Tribal Council, said the federal government's approval fills the tribe's hearts with promise and hope. But neighboring tribes, including the Federated Indians of Grayton Rancheria, which operates a casino complex 15 miles south of the site, has called the project a travesty as it's outside the Koi Nation's ancestral lands in a neighboring county. California Governor Gavin Newsom also had urged the Biden administration to reject the casino project that includes more than 100 table games, 2,700 slots, and a 400-room hotel. The Koi have signed an agreement with the Chickasaw Nation of Oklahoma to manage the casino and resort. I'm Jacob Resnick.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, January 16th, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dave Johnson, Althea Billings, Isabel Charlet, and Eric Tegedoff. The producer is Annette Newell, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Public News Service and Native Voice One. The director of evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7.